thank you. The current and past Ebola response efforts have focused much attention on these two outbreak curves, the number of cases and the number of deaths. However, this current outbreak has produced an unprecedented number of survivors, underscoring the need to also pay close attention to those who fall within these two lines, the disease survivors. People like these, people who survived Ebola, people who were coming back to their communities, wanting to help their neighbors, yet they still had many needs themselves. These pictures show a local CDC district epidemiology team meeting with survivors as they returned from treatment centers. And they witnessed celebration and joyful tears and applause when they were coming back. However, the CDC staff and the Ministry of Health realized that while the return of survivors represented a victory, it was also a major challenge for management and provision of support. And they asked me to assist in a rapid effort to gain information. These pictures show that staff meeting with survivors as they returned. You can see kind of the variety of ages and cases here. But I want to take you back for a second. Although now, in June of 2015, we have more information about the disease course and the survivors' needs. Back in October of 2014, we knew very little because groups of Ebola survivors were just starting to return to their villages. And many districts in Sierra Leone had not yet considered how did this fit into their overall response activities and to the ongoing outbreak. This assessment was meant to quickly, just in a matter of days, identify potential ways to support returning survivors. Given the limited number of survivors in prior outbreaks, there was a real lack of information and knowledge on the short and long-term impact of surviving Ebola. The limited data that we had indicated that survivors experienced both fear and hope, had strengthened belief in God, and encountered stigmatization both from healthcare workers and from their communities. Experts involved in prior outbreaks had recommended supporting survivors early, paying attention to psychosocial impacts, and engaging and mobilizing survivors to participate in Ebola response activities. The objectives of the rapid assessment were to identify how Bumbuli District in Sierra Leone could integrate survivor needs and care management into emergency protocols by clarifying their current discharge practice and making protocol recommendations, and also to assess the feasibility of survivors contributing to the local Ebola response by identifying their skills and interest in response activities and making program development recommendations. In sum, how could we achieve twofold benefits, directly helping survivors while survivors are helping to end Ebola? The rapid assessment was conducted from October 2nd to 6th in Bumbuli District, and it included a group interview with five members of the local Bumbuli District Ministry of Health staff, unstructured observations of survivor services, a review of handwritten records kept on survivors, and a large group meeting with 24 survivors of Ebola. A content analysis was conducted to identify themes, and descriptive analysis was performed on the quantitative data. Now I'd like to share what we learned from the survivors and from the ministry staff. This picture shows a survivor of Ebola holding up his discharge certificate, confirming that he is a survivor of Ebola. We learned about survivors like him in Bumbuli from their handwritten logbook. 71 survivors had returned from treatment centers back to Bumbuli District as of October 6th, and the first one returned August 10th. Most were working age adults, ranging from 4 months to 68 years, and half were men. Survivors lived in a variety of locations around the district, including the capital and outlying villages. It was important for us to clarify the current discharge practices to make recommendations. At the treatment center, survivors received those certificates after they tested negative for Ebola. Upon discharge, they might receive material goods and food to replace possessions that were burned or lost upon admission. And at this point, they still had to travel hours back to their home district, to the district health management office shown here. When they arrived, the staff welcomed them, registered them as survivors in their logbook, and provided counseling. One worker noted, "We need to give them more than counseling, but also provide some basic packages to reintegrate them into the community. A starter package, food, non-food, medication, money." Under optimal circumstances, they'd be driven to their local village chief's house, and then staff would officially hand the survivors back over to their village, letting the villagers know that these are their people, that they're back, that they're not a threat, and they can speak on Ebola. And once that ritual was complete, survivors would be driven to their home villages. Once home, many required further follow-up due to health or stigma issues. One child I met recovered from Ebola, but was now sick from something else. Staff identified her needs, and she was later transferred to another medical facility. Another man had difficulty with a community member publicly shaming him and his status as an Ebola victim. Staff tried to intervene on his behalf. One noted, "Stigma kills. If he does not die of Ebola during treatment in Calhoun, we should not kill him of stigma now that he's survived." Challenges during and after the discharge process included the limited fuel and vehicle availability, the amount of time it took to transport survivors back. The discharge packet wasn't standard at that time. It lacked important items, or it was altogether missing. And family reunification was difficult for people living in quarantine villages and for orphan children. Community reunification often involves stigma and fear. For example, one survivor reported eviction from her home along with her 8 children. And lastly, follow-up for medical or psychosocial needs was pretty limited at the time. This picture shows district staff with a group of returning survivors. They're providing counseling to the older survivors that are showing their certificates. The counseling lasted less than an hour, included information on prevention strategies like environmental sanitation and hand washing, as well as discussions about risks in the community, like sexual contact. Survivor immunity may be touched upon at this time as well. For example, survivors reported learning that they were less of a risk to their community after surviving than the general population because they could no longer get sick. However, more clarity and information for survivors and the support workers was really needed. There was a real lack of understanding and knowledge around the immunity issues. They also focused on family and community reunification, staff saying that survivors had to reconceptualize themselves and their role, given that they had lost many family members often, and probably their livelihoods in the process. Care packages might also be provided with whatever they had available on hand. A few minutes after this photo was taken, somebody came by, just kind of took out their wallet and handed everybody a few leonis or local currency. Survivors have food, economic, and housing needs when they return. This woman took over as a caregiver of this young child who was still breastfeeding age when she was orphaned from Ebola. The survivor lost her own children to Ebola. She reports that now she needs to earn a living for her and for the baby. Now I want to discuss, though, what we learned from survivors and staff about their next steps. The vast majority of survivors stated that they wanted to be directly involved in the efforts to end Ebola. 4 main categories of desired roles emerge: community education and involvement, media messaging, helping in treatment, and spiritual guidance. Many survivors wanted to educate their community about Ebola and prevent people from hiding, which is still a major problem. One man said that at first he denied Ebola, and he didn't want to go to the treatment center due to the rumors. He wants to spread the word that Ebola is real. A village chief was trying to rid his community of denial and wanted to teach them about environmental sanitation. And staff felt that survivors could help them to watch the community for sick members and become liaisons between them and the community, and also work with orphans. Survivors were already getting involved with mass media campaigns and messaging. Modalities included radio, TV, and video. One nurse went to the media so that people could hear her voice and see her image. She corrected people who thought Ebola wasn't real, or that you would die if you went to treatment, dying from an injection from healthcare workers. A few survivors were already working in treatment centers after their discharge and before they came home. When back, some recognized unmet needs. The holding centers at that time was a major problem. And one said that she raised the standard of care by placing IV lines in patients and their community. By placing IV lines in patients within their community holding center. And many people wanted to be directly involved in treatment or just in providing supportive care like cleaning up after patients. They could also liaise between the families and patients. And lastly, several just wanted to use their current skill or craft towards ending Ebola. Example, one said he was a mechanic and he could fix the ambulances. Although the theme of spiritual guidance wasn't really emphasized by staff discussions, survivors frequently mentioned their beliefs in God and how this helped them to recover and how they wanted to pray for others or preach. One survivor stated that God saved her life, so she's going to tell people not to hide if they're sick, God to save them. We found several survivors wanted to support the efforts to end Ebola. As one stated, "Since people are denying, I will sensitize my people that Ebola is real." Several activities stemmed from the rapid assessment. Our team presented the findings and recommendations to the local emergency operations center. This kind of football image represents some necessary management plan elements, like making sure there's training, having tracking of survivors, and identifying correct work opportunities for them. We developed a database, and staff was trained on how to use it to track survivors' needs and their interest and response activities. And data from the assessment was used to help inform a funding request for survivor support services across Sierra Leone. The results of the rapid assessment were, however, subject to limitations. It was done very quickly, and there was limited data on survivors, literally some handwritten logbook notes. It's also difficult to correctly interpret information across cultures and languages, and however, our collaboration with local staff does give us more confidence in our recommendations. In terms of recommendations, we recommend that local districts and global partners use this project as a springboard for future efforts, including developing plan for survivor management and integrating survivor management into outbreak response activities early in an outbreak. I think this is one of the more, something that you can take from Ebola and apply to something else. I was talking to one of our disease epidemiologists, and he said, you know, I never really considered how we incorporate survivors of disease into our surveillance and into our tracking into management operations into the future, and I think that's true for this. Also, mobilizing survivors to engage in response activities suited to their own abilities, and we need to provide tangible supports for them. It can be a really missed opportunity here. And tracking them to monitor their progress and identify needs, speaking of, I think, missed opportunities, because there wasn't good tracking for Ebola survivors. Now there's a lot of research that's trying to be planned and done in the three countries, and because there was limited tracking, it's really hard to look at the long-term follow-up for people. However, as this assessment really did capture just a snapshot of time in 2014, it's critical to take the pulse of the current situation. Much has changed since October. And there's been increased interest in things like sexual transmission, which could really change the way that survivors are viewed in communities. And like I said, the current lack of follow-up in survivors can complicate this because there wasn't tracking done in the beginning to identify what the long-term mental health sequelae were for survivors. However, I just returned actually from a second deployment in Sierra Leone, so I can report on some of the things that are happening there now. Several national and local strategies are taking place, including media messaging to honor Ebola survivors. Support is being provided through survivor conferences, their standard discharge packages now, and survivor support centers, and one in this district that I worked in, so I was pretty excited to hear that that actually was implemented. Survivors are being involved in efforts by caring for orphans, acting as nurses in Ebola treatment units for Ebola contacts, and mentoring and guiding other survivors as they return to their communities. Research on survivors is also underway or being planned. There's some clinical research, there's an ophthalmology study, there's some psychosocial research and CAP surveys being done, knowledge attitudes and practices, and there's also some research that's being planned on viral shedding and serum collection. In March of this year, the Sierra Leone Association for Ebola Survivors was founded. The association has local chapters at the district level and encourages work done engaging survivors to be filtered through them. The survivors we met said that they really wanted to have a union, that this model had been done during post-war with a lot of people who had been affected through amputation. And there was kind of a model for this already, and they decided in this instance to go for an association instead, and this is their registration certificate at the local association that they had. And their first event was a celebration in remembrance to mark the anniversary of the first confirmed Ebola case in Sierra Leone. I thought this was interesting. His shirt actually represents a quote that one of the staff members told me when I was there earlier, which is, "He who feels it knows it." So that's the SWAYS model, or motto. Another project I was involved in was the Cambia Ambulance Project. The goal of the project was to travel to chiefdoms to reduce community fears about ambulances and seeking treatment. That's a big problem. People aren't doing treatment seeking when they have illnesses consistent for Ebola symptoms. And we added a survivor to our team so he could tell his story about calling for an ambulance, going to an Ebola treatment unit, and returning to his village as a survivor. So here Andrew is sharing his experiences with a group of children and community members, hoping to really break down that fear and to increase SIG alert calls. Many community engagement projects like this can benefit from the voice of survivors. In summary, this outbreak really has produced an unprecedented number of Ebola survivors, and while they do have immediate needs that we identified, they're ready, interested, and motivated to help end Ebola, and their needs and contributions shouldn't be forgotten. I'd like to thank my co-authors and collaborators, especially those in Sierra Leone. Any questions?
Hi there, I'm Baden Braun from the CDC Quarantine Institution in San Diego. Thanks so much for a great presentation. I had a question about levels of sensitization among administrative health workers in the communities regarding survivors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of the efforts are necessitated by administrative health workers or health workers in the area having strong knowledge and support, and they themselves lacking the stigma about the survivors. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, could you comment a little bit about that topic?
I can only comment anecdotally on that topic, which would be, as you pointed out, it's very important for the healthcare workers to monitor, or to model, I guess, the correct knowledge and information and way of accepting back survivors. In Bombolee District, they had a pretty strong understanding of what it meant to be a survivor and how to talk to community members about that. And I would say that social mobilization, the people that I worked with in social mobilization in different districts did that well. But if you're talking about maybe somebody who's a contact tracer or a different type of response staff, an ambulance team member, may or may not have that same level of knowledge. However, a lot of healthcare workers were affected by Ebola and were actually Ebola survivors themselves, and so they were able to do a lot of training, but I think there was a pretty wide variation on people's knowledge of survivor. One thing I will say is the perception of what we saw in terms of stigma when I was there in October and when I was there in April and May are very different. So there was a really, really, there was a lot of stigma when I was there before. And now it seems like there's more of kind of a powerful thrust back of survivors. And, you know, in some districts, people have never seen a survivor of Ebola. So when somebody comes, they're pretty well celebrated and they can actually say, you know, you can call for treatment because like me, I got better, you know. So there really are a powerful tool that's been underutilized. So I think the stigma is reducing, but there's a wide variation in staff's knowledge, especially around transmission. And I, to be honest, I think there's a lot of unknown information, I mean, among ourselves as epidemiologists about what, you know, what the transmission looks like for survivors. I mean, that's why there's a lot of serum studies being done right now. So we don't have the best information to give people. In different countries, we'll give different types of recommendations for, I think one of the countries said, you know, no sexual contact indefinitely until we know. Another saying condom utilization for 3 months. So the science isn't really there because we haven't had enough survivors to look at this in the past. Question? Other questions? Thanks.